Welcome to Freeman's Music Business, a short-form podcast that condenses my longer interviews into bite-sized chunks for easy listening. If you want the full interviews, you can find them on the following podcasts. Speak Hertz is for talking to audio professionals. The Record Business covers the careers of music execs. And Music is a Racket is for examining how ruthless the music industry can be. This episode is sponsored by Analog Machine Records, a label releasing music in a host of different genres. I'll play one of their tracks shortly. I'm also sponsored by Tribeam, a production team that makes music for artists. I'll play some of their music at the end of the show. Today's interview is with the Swedish indie duo Nikki and the Dove, consisting of Malin Dahlström and Gustav Karlov. They achieved noteworthy success in the 2010s as one of the many Swedish indie acts to be favorably covered by the music press and rack up millions of streams alongside the likes of Lykke Li, Tove Styrke, and Iconopop. We talked about their career for the last 15 years, their success in the music business, and working with the likes of Skrillex and Swedish House Mafia. Here's a track by one of Analog Machine's artists, a Canadian punk band called Ex-Cowboy. The track is called That's When I Saw the Cop. There always seems to have been some kind of uncertainty about where the name comes from and what it means. Would you finally be willing to shed some light on that?
Yes, Nikki is the goddess, and the dove is the symbol for freedom, for peace. It's the victory goddess, and then the symbol of peace and freedom.
So DJ Ease My Mind, did that come out initially on Moshi Moshi Records in 2010?
Yeah. It was our manager, Ardis, who, he had some contact with Moshi Moshi, and they wanted to release it. So we went to London, and that was really fun.
How nice. And your manager is Ardi?
Ardis Adamson is his name.
Is he still your manager today?
He's a good friend. Not managing us right now, but a close and old friend.
And so then the Drummer EP and the Fox EP ends up coming out on Sub Pop next in 2011.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sub Pop being obviously a well-known indie label, how did you guys end up in their camp?
I think we met Susan Bush in London. She went to see us playing there, and she wanted us to come to Sub Pop, and we wanted to release something on Sub Pop. So yeah, it was nice. We met her and we had some mutual understanding.
And so then when the album comes out, Instinct, I believe 10 Music Group is at that point involved. How did you end up working with them?
10 Music is, they were always the mother label. So they were with us from the beginning. And then we worked with them through, it was like through them. They are the Swedish label. So...
But did the initial EPs come out with 10 or just with Sub Pop and Moshi Moshi?
It was regional.
It was, like,
it was different regions.
Yeah.
In the States, it was released on Sub Pop. And in Europe, it was released partly on 10 and partly at Universal, I think.
On Mercury or something?
Mercury, exactly.
Yeah, Mercury.
Yeah, exactly.
But 10 was involved from the beginning, you're saying, since 2010?
Yes, exactly.
Yes, because all this, So we were on 10 from the beginning, yeah.
How did you get signed to them?
We met Ardis in Stockholm. That was when we were working with Dora Steins. He came to a concert and then we met him frequently.
Ardis always, he was the guide for us, and
yeah.
he always believed in us, even if we did, in Dora Steins we did this guitar pop music, and in Nick and the Dove we started experimenting with more synthesizers and stuff, and he always believed in us, whatever we did, in a sense. Mm. So he was always at our side.
Yeah.
And he was connected to 10, and Ola Håkansson, who is this legend record
in Sweden.
Yeah. So they were our support. This Sub Pop and Mercury plan, we met Susan Bush, yes, but we had to thank Ten for these connections, I think.
It's all this. He was at Ten and he was working for us and with us and connecting all these people around us.
Mm.
And so once these initial success started happening, I think you reached number 5 in BBC's Sound of 2012. How did that happen? I'm not really ever sure how you submit stuff for that back then.
We have no idea. I don't know how that happened either.
No, it was just, we just got the information. And I remember Ten was so happy. They were like, they couldn't believe their eyes and ears when that happened. And I remember me and Malin was like two children because we didn't understand what does it mean? We didn't know what it was. We didn't know what BBC Sound, but then we checked the earlier lists from other years, and then we understood, okay, we should be happy about this. Because one important thing to remember here is that back in those days, and in these days, the music is always 100% the focus for us, and we never think about success in that sense. We don't sit and think about success when we're doing the music. We just do the music, and then it's going to turn out the way we want to, but we don't think about commercial success and stuff like that. So when that happened, it was a bit surprising. Anyway, for me, it was that because I remember I looked upon the music that it was a kind of strange music and not that commercial. When I listen to it now, I can hear it that it's kind of commercial anyway. When I listen to Instinct anyway, now. But when we did the music, I remember it felt pretty experimental and stuff like that. When we recorded those songs, we tried to use other kind of sound sources than just the normal instruments. I remember we recorded keys that we hit against pipes in the cellar, and we tried to find different kind of percussion sounds and synth sounds. And so it felt experimental when we did it, the production. But it sounds now pretty unexperimental, I think.
Yes, I think so too.
When I listen to it.
Do you remember where Instinct was recorded, mixed and mastered?
We recorded it in Stockholm, in a studio at Hagagatan.
It's called Ten. They had studios. Yeah. The record label had 3 or 4 studios that you can...
We could use.
We could use it.
Yeah. So it was in Elof Loewelf's, he had a room there.
A producer.
So we went there late evenings.
And he helped us record it and produce it. So he was like, it was good to have a person outside the band who could have the eyes on the music, but not involved as a band member. That's always healthy. Like, the same way as Alan Brax was on the second album.
Yeah.
Indeed. And who mixed and mastered it?
There were different people who mixed. It depends on the song.
Who mixed the drummer?
That was a collaboration between me, Malin, and Elof Loewelf. We did it together. All the three of us were in the room mixing it, and then Elof could stay a little 1 hour or two just to polish the result that we came up with. But me and Malin is, even to this present day, very careful about the volume settings, what should be loud and what should not be loud. Then you have to have a professional sound engineer, maybe, that can hear what frequencies you should take away and keep. So the volumes, I think me and Malin were like dictators to poor Elof. We were like, up, you should take that synth up or down. But then he sat and polished the frequencies, if you understand. Yeah.
So I guess the start of your career was very interesting. You broke through in 2011 sort of as the next, what people thought was the next in line of Scandinavian indie/electronic/pop artists that probably would be compared to like a Robin or a Mike Snow or a Licky Lee. And I think you got a lot of press coverage, did a lot of interviews with like The Guardian and Interview Magazine and other outlets, and toured a lot. And then I think the album was generally well received. How much of that media attention do you think was because either Sub Pop or Mercury or Ten were kind of supporting and pushing and wanting the media hype behind what you were doing?
It was all these ingredients mixed with the quality of the music in a way. Absolutely, we have everything to thank Adis for, I think. Not everything, but a lot, because I know he worked 24/7 with this. And I think it's a mix of different ingredients how the media report was going, because I think we had a quality of doing some music that was a bit left. So people were maybe a bit interested in what they heard. It's a mix of ingredients that it happened. It's not only that they pushed papers. I think it's pushed newspapers. I think it was a blend between the music and the work that artists did.
The first album, I feel, again, if you're just going off of media and hype, it seemed like it must have done well, even commercially. The second album comes out 4 years later. How did Alan Brax get involved?
That was through Henke Larsson. It's another close friend, and he was the A&R at 10 at that time. He was working with us for the second album as our A&R. And he said, what about Alan Brax? I will contact Alan Brax and see if he's interested in producing one of the tracks. And so Henke contacted Alan.
And did you guys end up going to him? Did he come to you, or was it all remote?
No, we went to Toulouse.
Okay. I feel like the production aesthetic between the two albums are quite different. The second one, in my opinion, sounds a bit bigger as far as the mixes being bigger and clearer, the drums being sort of bigger and they pump more, the bass lines being fatter. You have this sort of 70s groove thing meets 2010s indie vocals. But for whatever reason, it didn't seem to create the same media frenzy as the first album. Why do you think that was?
I think that we released it in Sweden, and we didn't release it on a English label, and we were living in Sweden at the moment and not in London as we did for the first album. I think that might have something to do with it.
Do you know why Sub Pop and Mercury didn't participate in the licensing this time for the second album?
When we were planning the second album release, I remember that Ola and Adis didn't have any, they don't think Sub Pop was that interesting anymore. We'd done that and they didn't think it was the right place for releasing this album of different reasons. I can't recall exactly, but I remember when we were planning, they were talking like that. It just happened.
From a production standpoint, I think Gustav had said that an important part of that album was making sure that the drums and the bass were really solid. And of course, they were a bit more acoustic in sounds than the first album. Why did you kind of switch aesthetically from the first one to the second one in that way?
We wanted to do something completely different. We didn't want to do the same thing. We have explored the electronic stuff, and we longed for the acoustic sounds much more. I remember we said when we toured that album, we wanted a classic band, like bass, guitar and drums, and we want to do a more classic setup. And I think it was Alan who said that, wasn't it, Malin, that you should be able to listen to four bars for 4 hours and not getting tired with it, if you understand. So that was an inspiration for us, I think.
So would you say that most of the album was done at Alan's studio in Toulouse?
No, I wouldn't say that, actually. We did a lot of that album in Gothenburg. Several of the songs were written in Austin, but they were kind of produced in Gothenburg.
We produced them. We produced them in our studio in Gothenburg. And then
exactly,
we sent them to Alan and he co-produced them.
Exactly. I remember we had these songs from Gothenburg that we produced, and Henke, I remember that he called us and he said, I have a very exciting idea. Maybe you will not agree, but I have an idea of contacting this dance house guy called Alan Brax, and he could add a feature that was kind of missing in the production. And that was like a dance feature. And we think that it sounded great. It was a good point Henke had. And then we sent the songs to Alan, and he liked them, and he felt that he could add something that he had. And he really did also, especially in the vibe. And he did small minor things that changed a lot of things, so to speak. The sound of the kick drum and sound of the snare drum and sound of the bass also. So he contributed a lot.
He seems to be credited as playing keyboards on a bunch of stuff.
Playing?
No, he didn't play. He didn't play anything. He didn't. But
he reprogrammed the drums.
Exactly. He did a lot of the drums things, and he that was the most important emphasis for me Malin and Alain that we should concentrate on the beat and the drums. That was the main goal for us, meeting with him. And then it, of course, spills over into synthesizers and guitars and stuff, like and basses. But he didn't play anything, actually, to be... In that case, it says wrong, because me and Malin plays not everything. We have a couple of friends playing guitars and drums also, but...
So how did you guys end up getting on the Swedish House Mafia collab on Lioness?
So it is Mother Protect from the first record, Instinct. So they liked it so much that they wanted to use it. And they have been playing it live for a couple of years, like a remix of it. And then now they wanted to do their own version of it.
A proper version.
So they asked us if that was okay. And we just... We got very happy because it's so wonderful to see that it relives in another shape because it's 12 years old and now it has a new life. So that was very nice. We got very happy when we had the news, you know, that they wanted to do it. And I really liked the version that they released.
They say that they've been playing their DJ version from 12 years or something.
Okay.
Yes. They, wow. Even when the Mother Protect song was new, they reworked it as a like a live version that they played at their gigs. So,
and now they want to release a proper version.
So we're really happy for that.
Thanks for listening to Freeman's Music Biz. You can find other episodes of the show on Spotify or Apple, and we have clips on Instagram as well. This episode was sponsored by Analog Machine Records, a label that releases cool indie music. We're also sponsored by Tribeam, a music collective that produces music for artists. I'm going to play a snippet of one of their instrumentals. If you're an artist, publisher, or label who thinks it sounds interesting, feel free to reach out on info@freemansmusicbiz.com.